So I'm going to show a presentation that was made 2 years ago, 3 years ago almost. And because it's been very improvised, I've not had time to make something special for this event. So this, I will go quickly through all that. This was what interested me in art when I grew up in France. Chagall, Cocteau, Marc Ernst, Matisse, Picasso were living around. And I had seen them in the street. I've seen Picasso at the beach, at the Garou beach, and so forth. So this was an inducement to art. And I started making drawings, and I did drawings all the time, up to the discovery of computers. This is the first computer that I worked on. I was still a student in 1959. And this is the first computer I owned, and that was in 1974. This is the first drawing I did with that system. So first, it's very geometric, very flat. And then I discovered coming here the power of waves. Wow. And I was working on the harbor and I looked at the way waves were reflecting the straight mast of yachts. And this was the beginning of my current work, actually. So this was the first drawing where I started to introduce waves in software. And rapidly, I mastered the tricks and was able to do things much nicer like that. And generally, I do my work by combining wave systems and networks of lines.
Got it. Are these lines mathematical in some sense?
Yes, it's all mathematical. It's all done in software. Okay.
So you know where you're heading, or you get you plan ahead what you want to see, or you get it as a result?
I plan ahead, and sometimes I am surprised, a good surprise, bad surprises, and I'm always writing software. I'm still in.
Let me try and guess about this one, because I've been staring at these things for a while, not this one, but the lines started out to be just a straight pattern of lines,
yes.
a loosely woven fabric seen in, yes, in plane. And then you make a mapping between the XY of every point in the plane.
Yes.
And a new XY, a diffeomorphism.
Yes, exactly.
There's a continuous map from, and that continuous map has some kind of a singularity along the line of that spiral.
Yes, exactly.
So do you remember what, I mean, you had to do math to make that diffeomorphism.
Yes, exactly.
What function would you use to make this happen?
Sine and cosine.
But how do you make the spiral, sine and?
Well, it's a combination of two spirals, I think, but maybe not. And it's pretty simple. It's so simple that I'm ashamed to be back again.
No, but you get us excited and we'll go home and try things. And
yes.
Well,
I create a function,
yeah,
that will map to a Z, which is function of X and Y.
Uh-huh.
And then I project that on a sheet of paper.
Okay.
This is what is happening here.
Okay.
And so all of my work has been evolved using those lines and still is now.
Okay. So I would say you have an X, let's see, an R of theta that is telling what the spiral is. And then Z is somehow it's a z is increasing as I approach the singularity. That's r of zero, r a.
Yes, and as it increases, it creates a change in the spacing of the lines. Usually, the lines are spaced regularly.
Yeah.
And so, at some point, it's much darker, and in other places, it's much lighter because the lines are spaced.
Projection effect. Yes. Oh, okay.
The original set of lines is just a regular grid, rectangular grid.
Yes.
And the loose ends. This is. You do it by hand, or you take a photo of a real fabric, or...?
No, it's done by software, too. It's a random function. It's a chance function, as John Cage would say it.
John Cage?
Yes. He was always using chance.
Okay.
And chance is expressed by random functions.
Wow.
I started doing that in 2003 or 2004.
It's just C++, right? You're just using a programming language, right?
Oh, yes. I've been using them all.
No, not, you could probably do it with Mathematica.
Yes, I'm working a lot with Mathematica.
Oh, you do that too,
Adobe Illustrator does some of this too.
I don't know how to do it myself,
but I think you can impose patterns like that to give you wave-like effects. We did this on something like this on various websites to depict photons, neutron waves, and so on.
Okay.
In various interfering patterns.
Okay. With I could believe
you could learning curves to learn how to do this.
Okay.
So I'm going to go quickly through that.
Yeah, good.
So that's. Good. And you can see the remnant traces of a fractal pattern, which is self-replicating in order to cover the plane.
Can you show me a big scale and a subscale of this pattern? So I don't see the fractal part of it. Do you guys see it?
This is the minimal part, and it's combining to create a plane covering tiling. And by slightly displacing, it creates those squares. That was an easy way to cover a large drawing with a small RAM computers. And this was building up. I was going to hard drive, and then back to software. And this was a trick I developed in the early 80s, because this is all I had to work with. So here you recognize also the plane covering pattern.
Yes, yes. Oh.
So in terms of our subject here, so you impose a z displacement, which is dictated without asking whether a real material would do it or not.
Exactly. I don't care about the real material.
Okay.
I wish I could. I wish I had tried to work with Hillerman Ferguson, who is a mathematician and a sculptor, and he has a machine. He had a machine that would have allowed me to do that in stone and to use the Z effectively to create a 2.5 dimension piece.
Mm-hmm.
But this never happened, so I always transcribed on paper. All my work is done on paper. But it's all done in software. So I can use whatever paper I choose, but it's always paper. I always use a plotter, Now I use a digital printer to render the piece. And I don't care about the material.
So, but in one sense, there's a trace of it being a material, because the lines that you're distorting, to put it to the surface, they were regular in some way, they're uniform in some way.
Yes.
And so they're the image of the original metric.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So here it was done through a spiral arrangement.
We'll never be able to guess the function. I don't think we'll ever come up with cool functions like you did. Well, we're going to try.
Go to the inverse space. Well,
this was a result of experiment.
Yeah. And
with computer programming, you can store your first find and build on them, build on them, build on them. So it's an easy way to progress.
Can you reconstruct what you did? Do you have the data somewhere that can reconstruct the steps that you take to for example, make this image? Or when you experiment, you just do?
You have all the source files for that red image, right?
Not,
because I have evolved my software, my operating system. I have worked with maybe 12 different programming languages, and some of them I have been faithful with. Now I'm working with processing, with Python, with Mathematica, but many others I have no way to reconcile with.
But it's readable.
Yes.
If one looks at this, you might not have a compiler or a system to implement it, but you can see what you did.
Yes, I can see what I did, and I can rewrite it in something else.
Yeah.
Yes.
Can you explain why it looks like a fabric? Why I feel like if I did this myself, it would look random and anything like a fabric viewed in some perspective.
He said he has Z as a function of X and Y. So he has this, first of all, he has a flat, you know, uniform isotropic texture of X and Y lines. If you look at it by itself, there's totally no three-dimensionality. And then he has this function, this morph function, Z is a function of X and Y. And then he projects that onto a given plane, X prime and Y prime.
What projection?
One of those nicest, I guess.
So how do you... It looks like you're seeing it directly from above.
Yes.
Here. Nevertheless, the slope z, the gradient of z, is big enough that he's seeing some things at crazy incidence, even though he's looking from directly above. But the edges, it comes in on the edges like it was real.
Yeah. So there's some in-plane displacement in addition to what I think you were saying, and that's kind of what makes it. I mean, the little parallelograms, they look like they have equal lengths if you look at it the right way, and that's part of the fabric perspective that Greg is talking about.
I don't see parallelograms.
Well, in one of the earlier ones, so,
yes, most of the time, this was probably evolved from a grid. So I drew a line like this, it was coming back like that. It was in a boustrophedon style. And I kept it regular, so this is what explains the edges. And I always kept the edges visible because I think they were a mark of my kind of work.
They make a big difference.
Yes.
Jokey, are you saying the whole figure is done boustrophedonically or just one little patch?
No, it's the whole figure.
Boustrophedonic means like the oxen.
Exactly.
Plows.
Exactly.
Nice.
Thank you. Yes, exactly.
It doesn't actually help. Just to make sure I understand. So you start with a mesh.
Yes.
So you take, every point of the mesh and raise it upwards, and can you also move it on the x and y direction?
Yes.
Okay, and then do you have like a relation between the other dots or the other points?
Yes.
Okay, that's what you thought. Okay.
So
that's why it maybe looks very...
Maybe another variation of this question. So would the length of a fiber from side to side
be constant?
Is preserved by the map, or
no?
It can be
no.
What are the darkened light lines that are visible? Are they an interference between two meshes?
Not in this work. Later, I've used interferences quite a bit, but only later. Here, you have white and dark just because the lines are closed or spaced. This is what creates the difference in contrast.
This is what you were talking about, Shankar.
Yeah, this is also on the other. But he explained it, so there's not really.
Okay.
There is also some symmetry.
Here you have a piece that is done with several colors, mm-hmm. and okay. each level is slightly different. So the function has just minimal changes, so that the lines add up, but creates all kind of different hues. And this combines a line, a blue line, an ochre line, and a red line. And probably this is more visible here.
It's a spiral.
Yes, that's a basic regular pattern.
That was the substrate.
Yes, that's the substrate. More details.
Oh. What's that vertical blue shaded area? What? How did that come?
Well, that's the superposition of the three colors.
Oh, I see.
And the darker ink trace comes from the time when the ink pen lifts, it leaves a drop. And so it is a signature of the work done with plotters.
It's on the side, button is on the side.
So this, even if you have all the functions and you repeat the process, you get something else. You change your plotter and you get a different picture.
If you would just do the same thing again with the plotter, slightly different, it was a warmer day, would it make a difference?
Yes. It's almost impossible to do the same piece twice with a plotter. Actually, I almost never tried. I was just trying to complete the piece because the plotter was such an erratic instrument that most of the time it fails. Uh-huh. So for most of these sheets, I turned them over after I missed the first time, and it worked maybe on the second time. And I always had more ideas than need for replicating work. So all of these works are unique.
Okay.
And the white is the underlying paper? The white color is the underlying paper?
Yes. This is done with two lines. One line is going from dark to light in the center. And the other one is reverse. So in doing so, it creates all kind of details that I have not planned. They just happen in the general logic of things.
Those arcs, are those things that you did not plan?
No, those arcs are planned. But what is not planned is all the little dots and the white interruptions and so forth. So this is not planned. This is not planned.
Uh-huh.
But the waves are planned. The squares are planned. Uh-huh.
It's when some two elements become commensurate that you get a surprise.
Yes.
Okay.
So are these projections on a different plane? Is this?
No, it's only projected on the plane of the paper. This is the only thing I have.
Yeah. In the direction of Z, not in
the. But I kind of use a scheme of projection, of oblique projection.
Oh, okay.
So here, the basic line was a replica of an Islamic line. This is what happens on the plotter most of the time. The ink dries either abruptly or slowly. So here there is no wave, it's just flat geometry. Here, it's the same figure, which I call the metagon, which is wavy and on paper on the right, and which is regular and grafted on sand on the left side.
Wait, the left side is what? The left side is?
It's made of sand.
Made of actual sand.
Yes.
Okay. So you're ascribing this sand with some kind of a stylus.
That makes sense. Okay, good.
On the right is on sand too. The stylus is a ball that is running on the sand. These are etchings made by etching my images on a polymer plate that is sensitive to UVs.
Are you presenting that by progress, by time? The works, do they represent any path of time,
is this a chronological sequence you're showing us?
No, it's not logical.
It's just different methods.
Yes. These are etchings also.
But it's still software.
It's all software, yes.
Okay.
Everything comes from software.
Okay.
This is a combination of using my sand mechanism and copper plates to make actual prints. So this is a dry point. This is made with a pendulum, projecting drops of ink as it goes.
Okay, this is Foucault's experiment in the sense of.
Yes. And this was made with a process of simulated gravitation across networks of weights.
So, you made this function just contract the x and y.
Yes, and this was a different process altogether. I had regular lines, and the lines were made with joining points, and each point was provided with a mass, and I expose the system to other masses, bigger masses, and it deformed the regular substrate that way, directly.
And then you just image the masses move.
Yes.
How do they feel each other? Do they have a springs in between them? I mean, why don't they just accelerate and go?
Well, because this is, this is not a time lapse.
Yeah.
This is a point in time.
Okay.
Where I conduct the system.
Okay. Oh, okay, so they have started to move, and this is a snapshot.
Yes.
After they.
And so here we have negative mass and positive mass. This has been playing with water waves.
It's actual water now. Not computer water.
At the upper left, it's just water in the gardens of the Getty Museum. At the lower left, it's water in a chanting bowl from Tibet. And on the right side is water dancing through waves. It's an installation which I did several years ago.
You vibrated the
containers. These are drawings done with a contraption built on the left side, which is a tensegrity. It melts with rigid bars and cables, and it swings in the wind, in the breeze, and it balances a pen. And it creates a drawing. And the drawings, I think, are very elegant. I like the poetry of Jean Cocteau quite a bit, and Cocteau was making drawings. And he always said, for a drawing to be beautiful, the line must be alive.
Alive.
Alive. And this creates lives that are very, very well alive, and that I've never been able to imitate in software.
And, but they do seem somehow alive. They're not alive in the same way.
Yes.
They're alive and they're civilized.
Yes.
These ones are alive and they're wild.
Yes, exactly.
But every afternoon you can have a new one, right?
Yes, exactly. It takes a full day of the light breathing, blah, 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 to display that on my balcony and come back in the evening with a drawing like that.
All right.
And all kinds of surprises are coming up. So this is the only one of my works that are not created by software. So these are large panels. They are about 3 feet by 6 feet, four of them, which I have done in 2008. This is done on an inkjet printer. It shows the level of details that can be achieved.
So it goes abruptly from black to white.
Yes.
What? That's the morphing function going through some kind of pole or something.
Well, this is done by adding several colors together.
Yeah.
And the last one is the same kind of drawing with the same kind of waves, but it's written in black, in white.
Uh-huh.
And white supersedes everything else that is under it.
Uh-huh.
And this is what creates the white accent there.
Okay.
To do that, I create the pieces in PostScript, because in PostScript you can accumulate several layers and color them differently, independently. So this was something based on the ideas of time, and you have different squares, each moving at his own pace, creating a network of parallel lines. And as they come together and turn in the rhythm of seconds and minutes and hours and days and weeks and so forth, it creates networks of interferences.
Is the substrate has only one period, right?
Yes.
They're pretty uniform. They're a little bit wavy, but the basic period is uniform. And yet, in the final thing, you have many periods.
Yes.
It's not just a Moray pattern where we see some big beat frequency, but it's all one frequency.
Mm-hmm.
How is that? How could that be done? The things are, and also the lines from all these things, this is the superposition of everything, right?
Yes.
The yes, thing we exactly. see, but all the lines, they take their direction from the first one.
No.
How do they know to do that?
No, they pick their direction from the time it is. So one grid is turning with the rhythms of seconds.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is turning with the speed of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a logarithmic sequence, so that the early ones, the first few seconds, dominate. That's why that orientation is the dominant
yes.
one, right? See, I mean, those all lines are all going northwest.
Well, they are not there.
No, on the red one.
Yes, almost on the northwest. But it could be very different 15 seconds later, because the second one will have turned quite a bit.
Okay. I see. Okay.
So this is something similar. It's done from a different model, and it's interested in moving small objects and not only lines. Then I try to incorporate text in the same system. And these are small examples of artist books which I have created.
Mm-hmm.
This is the last project I have been working on.
This is made completely different, right?
Yes, it's moving small objects. It's a fractal program. Is based on time, so that it will never repeat itself.
Uh-huh.
And so we are back with lines.
Yeah.
I was trying to make them alive. And on the right, I've displayed the pictures which I shot in 85 when I came here on the arbor to show that there is a consistency in my efforts, actually.
Really?
I ask you, how do you make colors? How do you impose the colors on them? Lines and on the pictures. Is there some consistent way for the coloring?
I don't understand.
She's asking, how do you choose the way to color the pictures?
Well, this was simple. It was a kind of an homage to Mondrian. So I used yellow and red and blue. And this is the colors he used for his Boogie Woogie last pieces. So this is how the colors are chosen. But generally, I work mostly with black, red, blue, and ochre. And this I have done only recently since I've been putting my work out on inkjet printer, because with plotters, it had to be monochrome.
The way these lines are made, it's a different principle that you found. It's not like you explained us before. It's some new thing.
Yes. I'm trying to remember what happened, but... There, the lines, the curves, are self-generating. So instead of starting with a regular base, I have a way to create curves that fit in a rectangle or square. And this is what is sent to my wave transformations. But this is more visible right here. Because here, you clearly, on the center figure,
yes,
you can clearly see the networks of waves underneath.
Yes.
And how it has moved the cycline system, which is thicker and black.
Mm-hmm. Are those lines trying to go at level sets, they're trying to stay at the same height, at the same Z? Is that what the lines are? No, because they intersect.
No.
It's not like that. Were the lines made by a formula?
Not by a formula. It's a kind of system that is alive with itself.
A dynamical system.
So you have the rule of evolution.
Yes.
In the
condition. It evolves.
The next step.
It finds where it has to turn to stage a picture and so forth.
Is it of like force equals mass times acceleration? Is it that kind of law?
No. It's just heuristics.
Okay.
And the goal is to create a line that looks like.
But for example, you don't have corners, so there must be something in the law that tells you something about curvature.
It's the law about curvature, exactly.
He has caustics there. I mean, he has cusp things.
Yeah.
It could be that that's when the object is coming straight toward us. Do these lines, are they living in X, Y, Z?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Are they closed? No. Yeah, we see a few ends there. And the darkness means it's spending a longer time there, it's slowing down?
No. The thickness is meaningless. I just wanted those lines to be thick and be pointed.
Uh-huh.
So I did that by repeating lines in different thickness, in different displacement. But it has no other meaning.
Okay.
I like Mondrian because on the left there's a picture of Mondrian show, which was my first exposure when I was 7 in Avignon to Mondrian.
Uh-huh.
Oops, something what has happened.
Maybe it thinks you're finished.
Yes, it's finished. It's over.
Okay, well, let's clap for you, and then we have some.
Can you go back to 1959 and say, were you a trained artist at that point, using a paintbrush or a pen? And how did you so presciently get into what we would now call computer art?
Yes, I've always been drawing. And I was getting some training when I was 12 or 13, but I was always drawing all the time. So I went to a kind of community art school when I was 12, 13, 14, and this is all the training I received. I was trained by my own eyes, and doing works, not liking it, but trying to improve, working incrementally, and spending lots of time in art galleries and museums. So I don't have a formal training.
But what was your mathematical background? Why did you make the leap to computer assistance?
Well, I just to tell you a personal story. I was born in an engineer's family. I was sent to an engineering school. I didn't like it. Suddenly, the computers arrived. And in 1959, IBM had its first commercial computer made available in Paris. It was the first in Europe. I knew it. I got a summer job. I worked on it. So I have a long time association with computers. And as I was trained as an engineer, this is where I got my path. And then I started learning again.
But at the beginning, you didn't like it.
Well, I liked math.
And you like math, okay.
But I didn't like the technical aspect, foundry and so forth. Mechanical works and machines.
So we're in this program that it's about sheets. It's about the geometry of two-dimensional manifolds.
Yes.
And we tried to make ways in which the sheet will shape itself.
Yes.
You saw some of those movies.
I'd like to try that.
You'd like to try it? Well, so you have a question for us, or you would like to ask us something? I mean, we have any number of things to show you if you give us a chance. Oh. But you should ask. We should give you what you want.
Well, everything that relates to what I do is of interest for me. So I've seen you displaying a strange image when I came in. I'm interested in that. I'm interested in all the ways that you create images.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. So, Iran.
Can I ask a couple more questions about the images we already saw?
Yeah. Fine.
The early images that you showed of that looked like fabric.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything? Do you have a random number generator in there at all? So what's the casket?
No.
No. These are all deterministic algorithms.
Yes, exactly. And this turns about when I became artist in residence here, I discovered John Cage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's John Cage's interest in chance that let me introduce the variable lines and the accidents that come in, but without being specific, we just hope to make chance be tight enough so that the result will be pleasing.
Mm-hmm.
The image you showed before this last one that looked like calligraphy. It was a line that had variable thickness. It looked like the one in the center or the one on the right particular.
Yes.
You say the thickness is not important, but to me it's very interesting because it looks like a defective fountain pen.
Yes.
Or something like that. So there, you are using a random number generator somehow, or?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So this, this is a later work than the?
Oh, yes, this has been done for two years ago.
Okay.
But the one on the right has been done many years ago.
Yes, but this is a photograph.
That's the new.
But all three of these are using some kind of random number generator, is that correct?
The right one.
Oh, the right one.
Random experiment.
Not the right one.
Not the right one.
The two others, yes. The right one is a picture of a nice reflection of the water.
Oh, okay, all right.
And this is what started me in my start of work.
Okay, all right. You'd like to capture the randomness on the right in an algorithm, but it's hard to do, or you've not succeeded, okay.
But it's the thing that's making the shape, the thing that's guiding the image on the right-hand side is the random wave pattern with caustics and everything else that was in the water at that moment.
Yes.
So there is method in the madness of the trying to write.
Absolutely.
And probably it's that, it looks so oriental, but there's mathematical laws behind it, and maybe that's why it looks so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Other questions?
Maybe one other question. Is there anything that you haven't been able to, any type of texture that you haven't been able to capture with mathematical formulae?
Not really, but I've not been engaged too much in that game. But I've seen it being played by texture specialists. But I'm able, with software, to recreate most of contemporary art. And that's not difficult.
Okay. But the thing, the one with the pencil in the wind.
Yes.
That would be hard to do, that one.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So maybe we have to do that. So, Aronime, you have your equipment here.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you showed this.
But not to everybody. So I have. I've got this thing someplace I can show. So we have to change the input. I think it's easier to just change the input on the panel.
Definitely, this is not anything related to my expertise.
Wait, does anybody know where the fire extinguisher is? You think I'm kidding? No, I'd like to know where it is before we start. Where's the fire extinguisher?
Is there a danger of fire, Robin?
No.
Yes, sir. Okay.
Just
I'm sitting near the door, it's all right.
Yes, but so this is nothing that has to do with something I do. It is while we were here, and yeah, okay, so.
If you warm it up again, will it fall the exact same way?
Yes. Okay, so again, this is not, I can do that.
There's some processing done in this, right? This is not real time, these movies.
Probably, I don't know much. So the thing is this, many people here are interested in sheets that would change their shape, would adapt three-dimensional shapes while they are free, not by external sheet. And this can be done by growth, by shrinkage, by some active part of the sheet. And so several people here are both interested in the mathematical principles of this, and how to implement them in real materials. And then just arriving here, a former student of mine sent me this link to this. So for a while, I tried to make some contact with designers and artists to see if all these concepts is of interest for them. And so she knew that, and she saw this online, and so she sent me this link. And then we put it, I showed it to Tom, and we put it on the program's webpage. There is another clip now. Turns out she's an artist interested in same kind of, even the titles of the things she gives it, soft matter, active thing. So it seemed like a very, very nice match. And so I contacted her and started emailing. I tried to get her coming here, but it didn't work. Her name is Dana Zelig. She's from Israel, actually, and probably was 1 kilometer from where I work, but I had to come here and get from the somewhere else in the US this link to this one. Anyways, so the system is very, very simple. It's this polystyrene sheets. They have this commercial name, shrinking.
Is this a shrinking?
I think so. So this is like a slide for
a transparency slide for the old
slide.
Old people can recognize that.
It shrinks when heated, and she draws a pattern of dark lines, mm-hmm. and shines a UV light on it. This is not UV, but leading to heat, non-uniform heating, and therefore non-uniform shrinkage of the sheet. And then this is the outcome. So
these are actual pictures of a real sheet.
Of a yes. This is an experiment.
I'm on her Facebook page. She also does programmable textiles.
Right. So this is the other clip which we uploaded, which is a textile with polystyrene fibers in it, which it leads to some active.
But does it transform only once, or is it reversible?
I think the last frame that we saw, it's flattening back. I guess it was.
They just made it backwards.
So anyway, Elisabetta Matsumoto was here. Elisabetta also was interested. We talked a lot about fabrics, something we might like to do together.
And I have,
we saw this.
I have some shrinking fabrics too. There's a commercial one.
Okay.
That you can buy, that you can sew into something, and then you steam it, and it permanently shrinks.
It shrinks.
By 50% in area.
Okay. So she said, yeah, we bought this lamp, we bought this thing, and tried to play with it. So there's nothing, I mean, from scientific point of view, this system is not good, I would say, because, well, as we will see, we will try to do it now, but it is, the heating mass is well defined when it is flat, but as it deforms, the angles change, and immediately they are the dominant, not the pattern anymore. Still, it's very aesthetic and very, it has its qualities, which are not so scientific, but still interesting. So Tom suggested I would bring it. I hope we don't burn anything, but it's not that hot.
Are you gonna draw some black lines?
Yeah,
this is just something simple. I don't know. try, and there is another thing, maybe someone else wants to, we cut some samples.
Yeah, some very small ones here, because they all get very small.
And they shrink.
Elizabeth,